Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Extra Turns. I am your co-host, Joe, joined again by
Alex
and
Coburn.
We are here today on episode 27 on March 17th, 2015, and we have some exciting news for you on Turn Zero. Coburn, go ahead with Turn Zero.
Gladly. So we now, thanks to Google, have a website. So in addition to our Facebook page and our Twitter page and our email that you can contact us at, we now have a website courtesy of Google Sites. It's sites.google.com/site/extraturnscast, all lowercase. And we'll be sure to put the link in with the show notes.
Absolutely. We will put the link in the show notes and you add it to your favorites. You can contact us anytime you want.
Yeah, so on our website, we have a homepage that tells, you know, new listeners what our podcast is about. We have a little bit of information about us and where we're from. And then we have a convenient podcast tab that has every single podcast and deck tech and everything else that we've done so far. So it's really easy to, you know, go back through and find specific casts to listen to. Also, we have an event calendar that shows different Magic tournaments at, you know, regional levels and bigger levels like GPs and things that we plan on attending. So you can stalk us and come and find us at these events.
Yes. One other thing I'd like to mention at Turn Zero, a big shout out to Coburn's fiance for coming up with our own logo. So now we are no longer pirating a skeld worm from Ice Age Image. We have a legitimate logo, which we are planning on putting on playmats. If you would be interested in a playmat with our logo stamped across the entire thing, send us an email or find us on Facebook, Twitter. Let us know. We're going to put an order together. If you want a logo playmat for Extra Turns, you know, we'll sell them to you at our cost. But
and why would you not want a playmat, right? It's going to be awesome.
I don't know.
Yeah, they're looking pretty good.
Yeah, they are. Well, let's move on to turn one. Alex?
All right, so turn one, we have the results from Star City Games in Dallas this week. Starting with the standard top eight, in first place we have Soul Tide Control with Michael Miller. Second place, Jeskai Aggro with Jim Davis. Third place, Soul Tide Control, Dan Jessup. Fourth place, Jeskai Aggro, Dylan Lurch. Fifth, Abzan Midrange, Jacob Geo. Sixth place, Mono Red Aggro, JB Milo. Seventh, Soul Tide Reanimator, Masa Tokutome. And in eighth place, Jeskai Heroic, piloted by Jason Crone. Pretty straightforward results with this tournament. Sadly, no really new decks cropping up. I probably won't see anything new until Dragons comes out in about 2 weeks. So
now, I am looking at the... So the Michael Miller, that's actually my wife's brother.
Really?
Well, I mean, they have the same name, but it's yeah. I was really excited when I was like, "What? He's been holding out on me this whole time." But no, I was looking at his list because of that, and you know, I really, really like this list. I don't like Planeswalkers as a typical thing to do. I don't play them for the most part, but in this standard environment, two Ugin, two Kiora, two Ashiok in a group seems pretty good, especially with the Seder Wayfinders helping you get there just a little bit quicker, a little more consistently. So, yeah, I really like this list.
This list has a lot of legs to it.
How exactly do you play this list out? Like the four dig through time, you know, this standard format is so slow. That,
oh yeah,
you know, four dig through time, I think you might actually get to cast all four. You might cycle your deck.
Oh yeah, like with as slow as standard is, this is very much one where you take an answer that you need off your first dig through time and probably take the second dig through time that you hit off of it.
Yeah. So I am really starting to like this standard. We played standard this past Saturday. We had a local TCG player event. I really enjoyed playing standard for a change. The format has finally got the breadth to it that I feel it lacked, you know, 4 months ago.
Sure.
You know, oh, everybody's playing Reanimator. Great. Oh, look, it's a different version of the Whip deck. Great. So I'm still playing Abzan Aggro. Yeah, I went 2-2. then I dropped. But, man, it was a blast. I didn't play the same matchup more than once. Granted, I only had four matchups. I didn't see a lot of mirror matches, which I thought was wonderful. I finally feel like this format is in a really good place, and now it's going to rotate. So usually I feel like I can't wait for rotation to see what changes, and now I don't want a rotation because I'm enjoying the format. Am I the only one that feels like it has hit maturity a little late?
No, I'm right there with you. I was playing at the same tournament and finished fifth overall. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I had the same experience. I've switched decks recently, and it's been a lot more fun for me.
Okay. Well, let's move on. Is there a deck anybody else in this top 8 or top 16 any of you all want to talk about?
No.
Okay. Well, that list is available on Star City. Nothing super new, just tweaks to, I guess, the current archetypes.
Yeah.
So, do you want to move on to my second favorite format?
Sure. Here we have the Legacy Top 8. We have Tendrils Ad Nauseam in first by Caleb Shearer. Grixis Delver in second by David Houghton. Third place Miracles by Ken Min Yeo. Fourth, Reanimator, Noah Cohen. Fifth, Sultai Delver, Tom Nelson. Sixth, Reanimator, Aaron Segrist. Seventh is Death and Taxes, Blake Donnan. Mm. And in eighth, Lands by Chris Cohen.
Oh, Lands.
Yeah, Lands.
Oh, Lands.
I just. You know, that's why I'm going to start running Armageddon in my Death and Taxes sideboard.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, take that, Land. Anyway, I'm not sure that would win you the game, though, which is pretty.
And I would say a notable 16th place, Tom Ross with Infect. So he's still out there, guys.
Yes, and he's still playing Infect. Go figure. But Death and Taxes did take 7th, so I am super excited about that. Have you all got a chance to look over the Death and Taxes list? I don't know if you all would look over the Death and Taxes list, but he is playing 2 Armageddon main deck because lands.
Well, he is in 7th. Chances is in 8th.
So. Yeah. So I thought they should be in the sideboard. He thought they should be main deck.
He has 2 more in the sideboard. He has 4 copies in his deck.
Mm-hmm. And he has main deck Chrome Mox. Because, you know, sometimes you still need a white mana. They make that 20/20 creature off their lands. You have a Chrome Mox, and you swords it. So I guess that does get there against lands. I am super impressed with this list.
Yeah, this list makes me pretty happy.
So, you know, I was kind of being a smart aleck saying Armageddon, but when I saw his list, I flipped. Is there anyone you all want to talk about out of here? I mean, most of them are, you know, pretty close to what we're used to, but, you know, what do you think?
So I have a question.
Sure.
In the Grixis Delver list, the one that, what is it? They got second place.
Yeah.
It has a one-of copy of Gurmog Angler. Mm-hmm. Is that normal?
It is becoming more normal. So Patrick Chapin at the Pro Tour in Modern tried to build a dredge deck, and Alex can tell you a lot more about that than I can. But the fact is, in Legacy, especially in a Delver deck where you're, you know, first turn, you have the possibility of Crack a Fetch, Brainstorm, Daze, you know, Force of Will. All of a sudden, you could second turn 5/5. It's not out of the realm of possibilities that you first turn Delver, second turn 5/5.
Yeah, it's interesting. It plays 1 Gurmog Angler and 1 Tassiger, and then I think the rest is all normal blue-red Delver. I just wasn't sure if that was a normal thing.
It really isn't, but like Joe said, it's becoming more popular, mainly because the Angler and Tassiger, for that reason, the only thing that kills it that's widely played in Legacy is Swords to Plowshares. Because it dodges Abrupt Decay and it dodges Lightning Bolt.
Yeah.
And not many other creatures have 5 toughness or more. So it, can block and attack very favorably in most matchups.
And you would think maybe Tarmogoyf could deal with it in combat. But if you're delving away your graveyard, all of a sudden their Goyf probably went from maybe a 5/6, if it were a 5/6, maybe down to a 2/3. So, you know, it has advantages. I'm more surprised that it's not 2 Tassiger, but both of them have their advantages. But I think
maybe the legendary clause in Tasigur keeps it from making more than one appearance in the deck. So you could feasibly have both Gurmag Angler and Tasigur on the field at the same time.
Yes.
And then your opponent is in a world of trouble.
Yes, they are. And you probably have no graveyard. So if they're playing Goyfs, they are tiny baby Goyfs.
But yes.
No, I think this is something in 3 to 6 months you will expect to see Tasigur in this list. The Angler, maybe. It's obviously it's not as good as Tasigur, but it is a 5/5. It does attack into a Tasigur favorably, so you have that there. But I think it from what I've seen in Legacy, is becoming much more common in the Delver type decks, in the decks with high card velocity.
Cool.
Yeah, and I would say it essentially is replacing Tombstalker, where you would normally see a Tombstalker in those lists, because one, it's easier to cast, and normally the flying isn't super relevant. Because the 5/5 just can crash through the majority of creatures.
It can, and especially when you're playing, you know, Fork Bolts, Lightning Bolts, Fires, if something gets through your counter spells. So,
right.
No, a 3/2 flyer is good. A 5/5 creature just bashes through about everything in Legacy. But, we'll see. We'll see how it works out. Give it about 6 months, and, you know, Legacy is the eternal format right now. Give it 6 months, and we'll see if it sticks around.
Yeah.
Did anybody notice 11th place?
Uh-oh.
The scourge of the format.
Merfolk returns.
Merfolk is here because Merfolk is everywhere. And as a new convert to Merfolk, I'm pretty happy about that. So.
Well, you'll be happy when we move on to Modern.
Yes, I think so. Why don't we go on and move on to Modern, unless you all want to talk about the blue-green cloud post deck, which I thought was interesting.
Oh, that's
okay. That's interesting. Yeah, it's nothing really new, but it's interesting. So,
all right. So the Modern top eight: first place, Infect, piloted by Joel Heath. Second place, Amulet Combo by Mason Young. Third place, Sultai Control, Cruz Hale. Fourth, Abzan Midrange, Andres Campion. Fifth place, Red White Burn, Joshua Kendall. Sixth place, Affinity, Brandon Borowicz. Seventh, Blue-Red Delver, Eddie Solis. Eighth, Merfolk, David Gomez.
Yes, so in eighth place, Merfolk. I have been playing Merfolk recently, and I really like this list. So Cure of the Glass Splint Spinner shows up nowhere in this list, but they've been showing up main deck, and I absolutely despise that. If you're playing a main deck, you're not really playing Merfolk. You're playing Merfolk with a hedge, and I don't like that. So let me run through this deck really quick. You ready? 4 Curse Catcher, 4 Lord of Atlantis, 4 Master of Pearl Trident, 3 Rejury. So there are 11 Lord effects, 4 Silver Gill, 2 main deck Master of Waves, because Infect and Burn, you have blockers for days, and you have a pro-red creature that generates tons of other creatures they can't attack through. His mana base, 15 Island, 4 Mutavault, 2 Tech Edge. Very simple, very straightforward. Like it. He's not playing the one that says your creatures can't be countered, Cavern of Souls. Don't need it. There's not a lot of counter spells running around. But right here, 2 of main deck, Monastery Siege. Alex, what do you think about that?
I think that's a pretty bold choice. I like it in this deck. The Dragon's Mode keeps your opponent from really dealing with your Merfolk efficiently by making your spells cost 2 more. Uh-huh. And if you put it down on cons, well, you are essentially just, you have a Howling Mind for all intents and purposes.
Absolutely. Like, if this deck starts drawing an extra card every turn, all of a sudden your Aether Vials are never out of juice. They're always putting something down. You're always pressuring the opponent. You know, you are on the offensive all the time. Your Vapor Snags, your Remands, your Mana Leaks, they're all there. Just tempo. If the long game starts to draw out and you have it down drawing an extra card, you're going to win. Like, you have the inevitability. Your creatures, look, I have 20 creatures. I'm going to win. you know what I'm saying? You're not going to lose. Anyway, of course, you know, he has 3 recalls, Hercule's Recall on the sideboard. I think everybody should quit playing that card. It's bad. Unless you're playing Tron, then you can play it. But if you're playing Affinity, don't bring that card in. Just let us Affinity people have our moment. at heart, I'm still an Affinity player, guys. I'm sorry. So,
well, I mean, apparently they did because the Affinity player finished sixth.
Yeah, well, that means they didn't play in top eight, so, you know. What do you think about it, Coburn? Anything interesting?
I like the list. I like the distribution of spells in the deck. Playing two Monastery Siege seems nice. I like that you can play it turn three after dropping a Lord and something else on turn two. And I really like four Vapor Snags. Vapor Snag, MVP, and Tempo decks. So I like that this deck's playing four.
It's very good against Twin. So any thoughts on any of the other top eight, top 16 deck list?
Yeah, so I was excited to see that, one, Infect finally took down a tournament.
Uh-huh.
For ever since its debut at the Pro Tour, it's sort of been, you know, sitting there in the weeds, you know, and like maybe the top 16, but never hitting a top eight, and certainly not taking down a tournament. So I was happy to finally see that, you know, hey, Infect really is here, and it's going to be here for a while. Also, in third place, we have another Sultai control list, proving that Gerald Fabiano's concoction from the open isn't just a pile of cards of Sultai good stuff that he owns. Other people can pick up this pile and do well with it.
Yeah, are you sure that's another list? Because when I scrolled through it, I'm pretty sure he went, I'm going to play the exact same list. Like, did you see any differences just right off? Like,
I don't think Fabiano had the Blue Sun Zenith.
Okay.
In his list. I think it was a fourth Saren Visions.
Okay.
But otherwise, yeah, it is almost one for one, the exact list, which just shows that this isn't just a one-time thing with Fabiano just playing good cards and being a good player. I think this deck has a lot of pull and power to it, mm-hmm. and it's not going to go away anytime soon.
Yeah, I hate to say this, but Thragtusk is probably an MVP in this deck.
Oh, yeah, Thragtusk is, because look at the other creatures. Tarmogoyf, mm-hmm. Thragtusk, Tasigur, along with a Planeswalker suite of Ashiok and Jace. So not only are people blowing all of their large removal spells on maybe Goyfs and Tasigurs, but then you start landing Thragtusks and just go to Value Town with them, that it's really hard to get ahead of that.
Well, even with Thragtusk, gain 5, slow burn down, you know, or Thragtusk, next turn, damnation. Hey, look, I still have a 3-3.
Yeah.
That sounds fun.
All the fun.
Well, any other decks in the top 8, top 16? Takeaways?
None for me.
I think we're going to have to add this Sultai control deck to our testing gauntlets, what I think.
Ooh, we probably will. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So, how about we move on to turn 2?
Sounds good.
All right. Turn 2. Changes to the Moto Cues. Alex, what can you tell us about this? I read through the article. They're just cutting everything, basically?
Yeah, so yesterday, Wizards posted an article telling how they're going to change some of the cues for Magic Online. The big one was basically any low-population 8-man cues were being cut, along with M15 and Theros Sealed. So Momir, Pauper, Vintage, Legacy, and Khan's Block Constructed are all being cut from the 8-man queues. Basically, they said that most people who play these formats say that they just do the 2-man, like the 1v1 queues, rather than play in 8-mans. So they figured, well, why are we, you know, wasting space if no one's going to play in them?
Yeah, I tried to queue up for a Vintage queue with my White Trash deck.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it never fired. I think I was in the queue for like 4 hours.
Yeah. Now, this isn't to say, like, all of the dailies for these things are still firing. They haven't dropped any daily events from these formats, just the on-demand 8-mans.
Okay. And the dailies are still on the rotating time schedule now, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Also, with their series of Encore drafts, they sort of condensed them down. Because essentially they had three different queues for their Encore drafts. So they've condensed them down into one, which awards prizes on a 6-2-2-2 split. So first place gets 6 packs, and then second through fourth get 2 packs.
So the 8-4 is done?
Yeah. Basically, they wanted to condense all the queues and get more firing. And so they sort of combined the different prize payouts into this format to help condense the queues and decrease start times for each one.
See, I don't know how I feel about that. Granted, I usually lose the first round of draft because I'm not very good, but I really did like the 8-4. It did reward you. You had a lot of expected value if you were a good drafter. Right now, it's like you get second place and you still lose money.
Yeah, I think it was a change from the like the pack per win queues, like the original Swiss queues.
Yeah.
So that way, people who got in the top half of their draft were still almost breaking even. Whereas if you won one, you were most likely just to drop.
Okay. Well, anything you want to add to this, Coburn? You don't play.
No, I'm good.
You don't play a lot of MTGO, do you?
I don't. I leave it up to you guys.
Okay, we'll hold down the fort for you. But and you do need to get an account, so when Holiday Cube comes back around, you can Holiday Cube with us.
Yeah, that's right. I might have to make an exception for the Holiday Cube.
Seems good.
The Holiday Cube is definitely worth it.
It's worth the $10 to set up the account?
Yeah, you actually want to sign up like in October, so that way when the Holiday Cube comes, you automatically get your free Holiday Cubes.
Yeah.
It's the best.
Noted.
But if you want to take a look at the exact changes, the link to the article should be in our show notes.
We'll put it there. Well, should we move on to the bad news?
Indeed. I think it's time.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk about it, so somebody else go
All
for
right.
it.
All right. Turn three, Cheaty McCheaty Faces at GP Auckland. So on Sunday, Wizards reported that two people were DQ'd from the tournament for unsportsmanlike conduct cheating. One of those was James Fazolari, formerly of Channel Fireball, and often posted on r/spikes on Reddit as Z-Man Jaspy, was caught cheating in round four for, quote, manipulating game materials.
So what does that mean?
That means that supposedly, or allegedly, he manifested a Whisperwood Elemental from his lab.
So there are seven zones in a game of Magic, right?
Yes.
Is the roughly, lab yes. zone one of them?
No.
Okay. So,
no, it is not.
Okay. You can't cast from the lab zone.
No, you may not.
Okay.
Nor may cards be put into play from the lab zone.
You know, I think that is going to be the name of this episode, the lab zone.
But yeah. So he was a big poster on r/spikes, which I normally check out pretty frequently, and he could offer some good advice. And I was really surprised to see this happen because all of his posts were pretty well informed and pretty good. He seemed like he was a pretty competent deck builder. And so to hear this was sort of a shock to me.
But did he not go on spikes and just admit to it?
Yes. Yes, he did. He did own up to it. He didn't try the whole, no, 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 they have it all wrong. He was like, yes. I cheated. I was being an idiot. You know, please forgive me. So I foresee that he can recover from this because he did, you know, he owned up to it, which is pretty much, once you have made this poor decision, it's probably the best thing you can do, is just say, yep, I did it. I got caught. I won't do it again. You know, I'll take my punishment and move on.
I will be interested to see if the DCI hands him a softer punishment than the other cheaters got that tried to lie about it and cover it up and all that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, they got 2 years or 25 months or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
What if he only gets a year or 9 months?
As a judge, I'll leave that up to the DCI. They know better. And obviously the judges who are there know the situation. I know a lot of what's been reported has been like tales from Reddit. So it's hard to say.
But if he's, although, if he's already admitted to it, I'm just wondering if they give him a lower sentence, if more cheaters that get caught will just be like, yeah, I was cheating, you know, and I'm just curious what that'll mean. There was speculation at a pro tour back in 96, 97 that someone was casting from the lap zone, pro tour Paris, actually. He was playing, the player had a combo deck and supposedly he had a card in his lap, although I don't think it was ever proven. It just was a lot of talk, but you know, I'm kind of curious what happens if you admit something like that versus you say, no, 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 no. And they say, no, we've caught you red handed.
I don't know.
Kind of like a plea deal. Like if you get arrested and you go to court and you're like, I didn't do it. If you drag a jury in there, the judge is going to slam you with a sentence. That's how it works. Hey, look, you get 5 years. If you're like, yep, did it. Okay. You get 1 year and a year probation. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
Just save everybody's time.
Yeah. I would be interested to hear what happens with this. I'm happy to see that Channel Fireball was pretty much the day after this announcement was made, was like, he is no longer associated with us. So everyone's washing their hands of this incident, it seems.
Well, this incident, there was another incident.
Yes. In the next round, in round five, a man by the name of Greg Quinn was caught cheating in round five for fraud, hiding an infraction, which basically this is what happens when, say, you're in the middle of a match and you happen to draw an extra card. You realize you've drawn an extra card, and then you don't say anything about it. Then your opponent's like, hey, how many cards do you have in hand? You're like, eight. And then you get a judge called on you, and you're asked, well, why didn't you discard? And all that fun stuff. And so it was determined that he was doing this kind of stuff intentionally, which means it's completely cheating, and he gets the DQ he deserves.
Wow. So I have been in a tournament where I drew extra cards. Mm-hmm. Not on purpose, but mm-hmm. I was sitting there and I honestly thought my opponent was cheating. So I started counting the cards and play in the graveyard in my hand. And all of a sudden it's like, huh, I have an extra card and I don't know where it came from. So,
uh-oh.
Yeah, that was a really awkward moment. I didn't call a judge. I was about to lose anyway. So I went ahead, conceded. Hey, this is done. I concede. Let's.
Well.
You know, it wasn't intentional, so I guess I avoided a warning, but it was a very bad feeling going, I think he's cheating me. And then I was like, uh-oh, maybe I'm the cheater.
I would advise anytime something like that happens, as soon as you realize something has gone wrong, call a judge, because penalties are normally less harsh or less severe when you call it on yourself.
Yeah. Yeah,
so
I took the scoop it up and go home route.
I will say it can also help you build rapport with your opponent when you say, oh, I messed up. I'm sorry. And you willingly admit to it and take whatever punishment is. So,
yeah,
there's that.
So I think I have a history with drawing extra cards because I was at a PTQ in Nashville, played a creature, and I thought it said when it comes into play, scry one. Right?
Oh, Joe.
Yeah. So it comes into play, and I go, scry one, and I pick up the top card, and I'm playing against the guy named Sean. I pick up the card, and he's like, what are you doing? I was like, I'm scrying one. It came into play. He's like, no, it's whenever you cast an instant or sorcery or whatever, scry one. And I was like, oh. So, again, I just conceded, and we went to the next game. I was like,
I'm going to start watching you like a hawk.
You better. If you do, I'll probably concede a lot more. So
sweet.
No, I'm really bad in, and both of these were in sealed. I'm really bad in the sealed to read part of the card and not all of the card, and then all of a sudden I'm taking illegal game action somewhere. So yeah, that's why I don't play a lot of high level sealed. oops.
All right. Well, should we move on to turn four?
Yeah, before sure. I admit to anything else.
Right. So turn four is related to what we've been talking about, these cheating infractions. It's how to protect yourself from cheating. So, let's see, was it recent? Yes.
Of October.
So it's from October. All right. So in October, Channel Fireball posted a really helpful article on their site, something else that we can put in the show notes, on how to protect yourself from cheating. It goes through a bunch of different things that you should do as a Magic player, that you should look out for as a Magic player, and things that, you know, that should be acceptable when playing the game, just from a rules perspective. I won't read the whole article, but a brief summary of what they talk about that's useful to us. First thing, very straightforward, don't test or play with known cheaters. If you know someone is a cheater and you have the option to, you know, associate yourself with them or play with them or not, don't. It brings you down morally as a Magic player.
So I would like to throw this in, that I am not a known cheater, even though I just admitted to all that.
Good disclaimer.
But I would say if you have an opponent that is, or you have a friend that is good with sleight of hand, good with, you know, cheating from whatever the reason may be, maybe play against them and tell them, hey, sometime during this game, I want you to cheat. Watch for it. See if you pick up on what they do if you really want to protect yourself against cheaters.
Not a bad thought. So we'll add that to our Grand Prix testing regimen. Cheating.
Yeah.
Anyways, so other things that the article goes into. One, don't mock the judges. If you're trying to deal with a potential cheater, you want the judges to be your friend. When in doubt, always call a judge, whether it's your fault or their fault. It never hurts to call a judge. Let's see. There's also, if your opponent's just being annoying, don't rush your actions just because your opponent's trying to intimidate you. This next one speaks to me. Handle slow play early. If you're sitting down and your opponent is taking, I believe in the article they say, 30 to 45 seconds on their main phase, not even dropping a land or anything. If they're doing that consistently for the first 10 turns of the game, it might be a good idea to go on ahead and call a judge. Because if you wait 30 or 40 minutes, into your match, there's not much that the judge can do. So try to play fast and handle slow play early. Next things, as far as, trying to catch the person cheating, you want to, one, when you sit down to play Magic, make sure that your play area is clear. It doesn't have any, strange things like notes wandering around on the table. Always confirm your life total changes. That's something that we here at Extra Turns try to do a lot. We're writing down both players' life totals. And then be on the lookout for friendly spectators, anyone who could possibly be assisting with your opponent trying to win the game. Keep track of cards all the time, like Joe did that one time. And always be vigilant when your opponent is manipulating either their library or yours. And this is probably one of the biggest things you can do. If, say, your opponent is casting a Brainstorm or a Dig Through Time or a Serum Visions that lets them scry, that's the point when you need to be most vigilant, is when they are manipulating the top cards of their library, putting stuff back in their hand. You want to make sure that they're putting the right cards back when they're supposed to and not, Brainstorming when they're supposed to be Serum Visions. Yeah, that's when you should be focused on what your opponent is doing and how they're handling their hand. And always, always shuffle or cut your opponent's deck when it's presented. There's a really cool video on the Channel Fireball article of how to properly shuffle an opponent's deck for the tournament. I encourage you to check it out.
And sometimes, if you get your opponent's deck, count the cards in it. You may pick up a free win.
Yeah, they recommend counting at the very beginning of matches, yes. Counting your opponent's deck.
No, absolutely agree. After sideboard, it could be up to 61, 62 if they want, but, count it out. And if you ever see your opponent do the double nickel shuffle, which is two times, you make a pile of five, you make five piles, you pick them up one on top of each other, you make five piles, you pick them up one on top of each other, and then maybe riffle it twice and hand it to you, you might want to call a judge. If you don't know what the double nickel shuffle is, how come I know everything about cheating and Magic? This is starting to worry me. But if the double nickel shuffle, if you have a 60-card deck with 40 cards, 20 land, you put 20 land on bottom, do a pile of five, or five piles. You pick all five piles up. You do five piles. You pick them all up. You'll have a perfect distribution, two spells, one land, two spells, one land, two spells, one land, throughout your whole deck. So at that point, you run a riffle through it or you whatever, and you're still going to have a fairly close distribution. It's something I've seen people do around here often, so I make sure to shuffle their deck thoroughly.
But, interesting.
Yeah. Watch out for the double nickel.
All right. Well, I think that's all I have for the Channel Fireball article. Again, I encourage our listeners to go and check it out if you want to become better at preventing cheating.
Sounds good, Pitiless Horde. What did I say?
What?
Pitiless Horde. Yeah, let's move on to turn five so I can talk about some of my new favorite Dragons of Tarkir cards. Turn five?
Turn five.
All right.
Okay. I won't go. Yeah, I'm going first. Sorry. Pitiless Horde. Have you all seen this card?
I have not. No. What does it do, Joe?
Okay, so it is a rare creature. It's 2 colorless and a black. At the beginning of your upkeep, lose 2 life. Don't care. It's a 5/3 for 3. 5/3 for 2 and a black. So, you know, you're playing 2 or 3 colors. Don't care. It's coming down. 5 power on the board. Turn 2, turn 3. You know, depends on what colors you're playing. If you have a little bit of acceleration, turn 2, 5/3. So, I'm pretty excited about this. I don't care about losing 2 life a turn, but being able to throw 5 power down for 3 mana is something I've always liked to do. I liked Phyrexian Negator way back in Urza's Destiny, 5/5 for 3. You know, I look at this and I think it is a pretty good card.
So, Joe, what do you think you'll be playing this card in?
Legacy? No, I'm just kidding. probably in a modern mono black sort of, you know, aggro. I don't want to call it an aggro suicide, but an aggro deck, the same deck that I'd play 4 of Slaughter Pact, because I don't mind playing 2 in 1 turn. It's this turn. I'm either going to win or lose. You know.
Okay.
Yeah. I think
there are some. Sorry.
I think a lot of people are overlooking the card. In this current standard, you know, with Siege Rhino, it attacks in, kills a Siege Rhino. It's only 3 mana investment. So I don't think it's that bad.
So my question to you, Joe,
yeah,
is do you play Pitiless Horde or do you play Master of the Feast?
I would probably play the Horde. It doesn't give your opponent the card advantage, and it doesn't cost 2 black. So
okay,
you can work it in a lot more things. It makes it just a little bit easier to cast.
Sure.
And especially in a lot of decks you're going to play it in, you don't want to be fetching into a shock. And if you're playing the Master of the Feast, you know, I don't want to be giving you, I don't want to throw down a Master of the Feast when my opponent's playing Burn, you know.
And you can avoid the life loss by just dashing it in, right?
You can. So if you draw it later in the game, 4 mana, black, 2 colorless, and it has dash. So early in the game, it either draws a lightning bolt, you know, I think it's a good card. I think it's going to be pretty good.
Sounds good.
I could be wrong.
All right, so the one card that has me very interested from Dragons of Tarkir is Atarka's Command. So for those of you who don't know, it has 4 modes, and we get to choose 2. Each opponent takes 3 damage. Players can't lose life or gain life this turn. Put a land into play, or all creatures you control get +1/+1. And the deck I want to play this in is in Burn. So if you take this card and replace all your Skullcracks with Atarka's Command, at worst, Atarka's Command is simply a Skullcrack. 2 mana, 3 damage, and no one gains life. At best, you're dealing upwards of 5 to 7 points of extra damage, depending on how many creatures you draw. Because in some matchups with Burn, preventing life gain is completely irrelevant. They don't run any sort of life gain effects. And so Skullcrack just becomes Lightning Strike in those matchups. But with Atarka's Command, you can choose to deal 3 damage and then pump your team to increase your damage output considerably.
That does seem pretty good.
I think we talked about a Burn deck like that a little bit on the last podcast. The other Alex is also very excited about Atarka Burn.
Yes, I listened to that, and I believe with Swift Sphere, this makes Swift Sphere even better. Because you never want to play Skullcrack on your own turn, right? Seems right. Bad. If you're playing against somebody that, you know, you can aggro out, you don't think they're going to be trying to gain life, you play this on your own turn, you know, turn 3, you have double Swift Sphere already in play, you know, bolt you or whatever, and then command. Wow. I think that's game, turn 3. So.
Yeah, I was testing this out on Tapped Out, and I was goldfishing turn 4 kills.
Yeah.
About 3 out of 5 games.
Yeah. Seems pretty good. I think we're going to have to ban Lightning Bolt.
Don't you say those words, Joe.
Sorry.
The only solution.
If we had more time.
Don't you say those words, you can't take them back.
If we had more time, I'd make the whole argument. But Coburn, what do you think?
Yeah, so the deck that I'm most excited to test out is also the one that I talked about on the last podcast. Four color assault formation in Modern. So there's an article where assault formation was spoiled, and this is the enchantment in Dragons of Tarkir for 2 mana, 1 colorless, 1 green. Each creature you control assigns combat damage equal to its toughness rather than its power. In addition to that, you can pay green mana to make target creature with defender be able to attack, and then 3 mana creatures you control get +0/+1 till end of turn. So as those two activated abilities. I'm excited about it because this means you can run Doran effects 5, 6, and 7 in a Modern deck, and there's a list that plays Mardu Ascendancy that allows you to win on turn 3.
Yeah.
I saw this list. This is the nuts.
Yeah, so I mean, if you don't draw an assault formation, it's okay because you just beat down with Doran and Siege Rhino and a Tarmogoyf.
Yeah,
but if you happen to go turn 1 birds, turn 2 Doran, turn 3 Mardu Ascendancy, you can swing for 20 and life's good.
So are they trying to make Modern a turn 3 format? Because it seems that way. Or are they trying to make it just let's make sure every game is over by turn 4?
Well, what you have to remember is that plays like these can deal 20 damage by turn 3, but that's if the opponent doesn't interact whatsoever. So Burn can win, you know, on turn 4 if the opponent doesn't interact at all, and if he doesn't draw any lightning bolts. This deck's the same way. It's if your opponent for some reason doesn't block your Bird or your Doran, then they'll lose. But more than likely, your opponents can do things to at least make the game last until turn 4 or 5.
Yeah. Hey, you know, that's why we need to play some more Commander. But
right.
Can I talk about one more card? Just one more?
You sure may, because you missed out last week.
Collected Company. Have you all seen this?
I have.
Okay.
I think so.
So this is a straight addition, maybe 3 of, maybe 4 of, to $40 green. And hopefully it's not very expensive, so it doesn't push it over that price target. So it's an instant for 3 and a green. Look at the top 6 cards of your library. Put up to 2 of those cards with converted mana casting cost, 3 or less, from among them into the battlefield. Put the rest on the bottom of your library. End of your turn. Collected Company. Put a 5/5 in play, maybe. Or I guess it'd be a 4/4. Put a 4/4 in play with Hexproof, and put a 4/5 in play. Seems good.
Seems really good.
Yeah.
I like that.
You know, you may sort of whiff. And only, I mean, you with $40 green, you are very likely to get 2 creatures out of the top 6 cards. But you may whiff, and you may get an Experiment 1 and, you know, a Geist or something. But, you know, best case, you end up with 2 4/4 hexproof guys. Seems pretty good.
I like this a lot because it gives the $40 green deck instant speed responses.
Yes.
So if you're trying to out-aggro your opponent, this card is good.
Mm-hmm.
If you're trying to recover from a board wipe, this card is good.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be what, you know, the deck cares about. And the only card that you play, the only creature that's converted mana cost 4 or more is Thrun, right?
Yes, and he's a 2 of.
Yeah, so more than likely, if you see creatures, you'll be able to play them.
Yes, and if you hit double Thrun, you'll just be sad. But it's not the worst thing that's ever happened, so.
No. And good news, Joe.
Yes.
Collected Company is currently pre-selling for only $4.50.
Oh, so we need that to get down to around $1.
Well, this is the pre-sale. I mean, the price is going to tank after release, so don't worry.
Okay.
Yeah. Just pray that it doesn't see play in Standard. That's the key.
Okay, well, I think it probably will, but I guess this is probably a good time to go ahead and admit to the whole world that $40 green deck is no longer only $40.
Dang it.
Yes, I went ahead and got full art forest. So $40 green deck is now $46.
Oh, well, that's just your green deck.
Yeah, that's just mine. You can actually build the thing for like $32 and be somewhat competitive in Modern. So I 4/4'd a PTQ with it on a bet. Yeah.
I'm really tempted to build this deck now because I have most of the cards and just the Avatar, the Resolute, and Collective Company just seem like great additions to the deck.
Mm-hmm.
And the Avatar, I think, will put this deck over the top.
Tell everybody what the Avatar does again.
Sure. So this is, again, a card that we talked about last week. It's a 3/2 creature with reach and trample, and Avatar of the Resolute enters the battlefield with a +1/+1 counter on it for each other creature you control with a +1/+1 counter on it. Mm-hmm. You would think it would cost more, but it is only 2 green mana.
So it is so completely possible in this deck it comes in play with 2 counters.
Oh yeah, definitely. If you go turn 1 experiment 1,
yep.
Turn 2 Stranglerout Geist, and somehow the Geist dies either on turn 2 or turn 3, then you play an Avatar of the Resolute, and it's a 5/4.
Yes. Well, I also play 3 Scavenging Ooze main deck now, because they're cheap enough to fit into the deck. So first turn Geist, second turn Ooze, third turn eat something with the Ooze, slam this guy, and how big is he? 5/4?
Yep, with Trample.
Seems good.
And Reach for those pesky
and
flowers.
Reach for Delver. Take that, Delver. I don't know. I think $40 green deck. Somebody at Wizards loves me, and they are making it better.
Yes.
So, y'all have anything else to add?
No, I'm good.
Nope.
All right. Well, I think I have spoken my mind and admitted enough that I should probably go now. But
Coburn, I think we need to find new testing friends.
Oh.
Agreed.
Guys, I don't cheat against you.
We just won't play him online. That's it.
Yeah, there we go.
Oh.
We trust you.
I promise I don't cheat on purpose. I'm just really bad at the game. Anyway, let's get out of here.
That's all we've got. So until next time, have fun, play some Magic.
And try not to
go into extra turns.
Do that again. I'll erase that. I won't say anything this time.
Do you want me to do it?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, well, thanks for joining us for another podcast. Until the next time, have fun, play some Magic.
And try not to go into extra turns.